Okay, ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I've been following you for a while, along with Joseph P. Farrell, Richard Dolan, and John Rappaport. You're all pioneers of your field. My question is, with the state of the world and financial world being the way it is my IRA safe? I'm thinking not. I've been thinking about taking it out for a while now. Is this a smart move? And if so, what would you do with it? I was thinking about paying off some old lingering debt, and then I would have a little left over to put somewhere, such as silver or gold or maybe real estate. What are your thoughts? There are pros and cons here. I don't see any threat immediately to IRA. That could change. You have to watch what happens in the tax legislation. I don't have an IRA because the federal government played games with my IRA and had to bust it at the worst possible moment. It was $500,000, and I had to bust it and pay $225,000 in taxes. I didn't think they'd think I would do it, and of course I used that to comply with a phony baloney request that they were making on the litigation. So it was very, very much economic and spiritual warfare. But so my attitude is, I'm never going to go into one of those again. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. At the same time, if you look at the powerful contribution it makes to not have to pay taxes and to let your investment compound, I would strongly recommend that you that if you've got it, that you consider keeping it. Now, if you want to put it in gold or silver in a depository, you can. And there are also ways to put it in real estate. It doesn't have to be in securities if you're uncomfortable with the securities market. But I would not be eager to take it out of the IRA unless and until we really see a movement by Congress to do something that would impair that. Catherine, I'm a Solaris subscriber and enjoy reading the information you provide. Currently, I'm reading your second quarter wrap-up interview with Cynthia McKinney. It includes a number of negative comments about the Federal Reserve. I can understand why the Federal Reserve Bank is bad. What I don't understand is why any other central bank would be any better. You named Hamilton Securities for Alexander Hamilton. Much of what I know about Alexander Hamilton is that he supported a central bank, First Bank of the United States, and Thomas Jefferson opposed it. How is it that you support Alexander Hamilton but oppose central banks? Hamilton was trying to get the U.S. out of domination by the European central banks, and the idea of having American central bank was basically make America great. It was, we needed to get out from under the thumb of the European central banks and the European markets. We needed to, what Hamilton was saying is, we need to have an industrial base to do that. We need to pool capital. Now, I don't think a central bank has to be bad. There are ways of managing it that can be very supportive, and it doesn't have to be a perpetual drain. So this is very much how you run the money system, and what kind of transparency and accountability there is. Theoretically, remember, the money from the profit from the central bank is paid over to the treasury. But the reality is, if you look at all the games behind the scenes in the federal credit mechanism, whether it's the Treasury or the central bank, and the different parts thereof, like the ESF, I think the problem is how they're managed and the corruption. I would say it's very, very important not to consider or to consider changes or the design of the financial system without looking at the governance system, which is basically who governs and where are things going. One of the discussions at the conference is on the implications of blockchain technology and these other technologies to the central banking system and to the financial system and what they mean and how they're going to work. Catherine, thanks for the great interview with Christopher Mann. Could you please ask Carrie to explain in more detail what he meant by Will's execution was a bit disappointing? If you look, I sent you a message. If you look at the interview that he did with Will Allen, he interviewed him before he went to visit his operations and was very disappointed with the quality of the operations. And he describes that. He put in an addendum in the transcript to the Will Allen interview on urban farming. So I would recommend you take a look at that if you're interested. Hi, Catherine. This is a link to a very interesting and revealing talk that John McAfee gave at a recent blockchain conference. It's mostly about the Internet of Things as creating a vulnerability in a manner in which cryptocurrencies will likely get hacked. At one point, he explains how a mass and simultaneous emptying of wallets could occur. It's well worth a listen. Have you considered doing an interview with John? We posted that video when it first came out. I think it's very good. And James Quaid is putting up his next commentary on cryptocurrencies on Saturday. So, again, and he's going to post it in that commentary again, so it'll be posted twice, once in Topics and there again. I am looking for someone to discuss security because McAfee is very much in that business. I'd like to get somebody who's not necessarily talking their book. But I think McAfee is very interesting, and I will certainly put on that his name on the list for consideration. I got a note from McKinney. I wanted to read Catherine on September 10, 2001. The U.S. Army published a SAMS report stating that the placement of U.S. troops in Israel was a very dangerous deployment for the U.S. because the Mossad was cunning enough to attack those troops and make it appear as if the Arabs had done it. This is a dream for Israel. She's referring to the fact that it's just been announced that we're going to put a U.S. Army base in Israel. This is what they've been angling for at least a decade, and with Trump now they have it. I posted on my Facebook page for the people breaking into my Paul Craig Roberts to please look it up if you don't know about it. This is horrible, and only worse is sure to come. The total capitulation of Trump and the people of the U.S. So she was pretty upset about that, and I can certainly see why. New question or new comment. PNG recently discovered the data mining emperor has no clothes. This has huge implications because a new advertising paradigm must emerge. What kind of opportunities are now worth consideration? How will propagandized media respond to such considerations? What if consumers started making choices based on variables not conducive to predictive programming? What happens when consumer reviews or likes, dislikes are no longer reliable? I can't properly articulate why this is such a big deal, but it is. For instance, Alex Jones recently included an Emmerich's Essentials organic lineup that in combination with his other offerings could potentially impact big players because those that support his show will buy his products instead of theirs. What if people change their purchasing habits for political reasons? What if people change their purchasing habits based on information from what they consider to be trusted news content providers? The future direction P&G takes might be worth paying attention to because it would provide valuable insight into all the above questions. This is a very important point, and this is what I've been saying since 2000. We vote with everything. We vote with our thoughts. We vote with our attitudes. We vote with our purchasing patterns. We vote with who we admire. We vote with our banking. We vote with our time. We vote with our media attention. And, of course, we vote in the polls. But everything we do is a vote, and you're giving energy. You know, what you pay attention to is what grows. And so, yes, I think what I keep telling everybody is if we all just do what we can do, we don't do more, we just do what we can do, and we understand our power to impact all these different things with our choices of our time, attention, and our money. It's what I always say, a mighty army arises. A mighty, mighty army, because we are many and they are few. So from your lips to God's ears. Hi, Catherine. I started this email several times just wanting to ask you a couple of questions, but the more I considered my questions and tried to stage them, the more difficult it became. Some of us are paying attention and cannot believe the world that we are seeing. I must have taken the red pill sometime in my late teens, but didn't understand at that time that I saw things differently than so many others. I live abroad in Asia for several years in my 20s, which also helped erase the film from my perceptions of America and our world. I don't know how I first discovered you, but I'm glad I did when I watched your YouTube video at the space conference that took place in 2014. You are the best credible source that speaks out about how our world we live in and the troubles around us. Who could imagine that our government is as corrupt across the many platforms? How do we get you on Sean Hannity or functioning as an advisor to Trump? It doesn't make any sense for me to be on Sean Hannity or to function as an advisor to Trump. The reality is, whatever I do, I have to do whatever I do with integrity, and I have to do it with people who have integrity. And the reality is, Fox News is never going to let me do and say what I want to do and say. I mean, it's just, you know, they're on the pro-centralization team, even though I certainly think Fox gives rein to people to do some very good things. So, you know, I like Sean Hannity. I post things that he does. There's no point in me working for the federal government. It just, you know, you want me outside being an honest voice. So we need good independent media. We need people who are giving an honest voice and an honest map. And the reality is, there's nothing I could get done in Washington. I mean, it's what I said in response to the last question. We need that mighty army to arise, and it's not gonna happen unless there's a lot of voices helping it do that. And that's what I need to be doing. We need your narrative exposed more broadly to the public. I agree with that. We've been working for many years on a new website. And before we can really do significant marketing, we need that website to go live. And I'm absolutely hoping it will happen before the end of the year. Remember, it's very important when you think about marketing of these issues that if I always use my email example, if I sent you an email titled Highly Confidential, Please Share With No One, and in it I described to you how every man can have as many erections as he wanted and every woman can have as many orgasms as she wanted, and I said, please, under no circumstances, share this with everybody, with anyone, how long do you think it would take before everybody in the English-speaking world had a copy of that email? 30 days? So when something wants to go, it can go. Now, there's plenty we could do to be more interesting, more entertaining, you know, and to do better marketing. So anything you can do to help us reach the audience that wants to be reached, remember, not everybody wants to know. We want to reach the people who want to know and the people who want to basically take actionable intel and do something about it. Because, again, we're interested in that mighty army arising. And so anything we can do to help that mighty army arise, or anything you can do to help us help get that done, that would be wonderful. Also, if somehow the truth could come out about 9/11 and the other corrupt policies and issues with our geopolitical system, we have the possibility of change in this 1984 world that we are living in. Yes, I agree. I think the truth of both the Kennedy assassination and the 9/11 false flag would be very helpful. Okay, $19 trillion in undocumentable adjustments, unifying. One of the reasons I do focus on the $19 trillion in undocumentable adjustments is that's everybody's money. You know, rich and poor, young and old, black and white, north and south, east and west. It's all of us. It's a great unifier. And we're all getting drained, and we can't get caught up in the divide and conquer. We have to come around and get something done on the things that unify us. And part of the problem is if a group of people can steal and finance lawless behavior outside the law, you know, and have infinite money to do it, then if you don't turn off their gas, their car's going to keep on speeding by ours. Next question. I have some friends and even bright business people who are concerned about the strength of the petrodollar and will it get revalued against other world currencies. China, Russia, and Venezuela just recently announced that they will only be trading oil with gold-backed currencies now, namely their currencies, not the U.S. petrodollar. Some are even suggesting a global reset amongst many currencies throughout the world, with crazy extremes such as the dinar and dong amongst them. Could something so implausible really happen, or is this just another meme to lend false hope to the struggling poor and masses? The global reset has been used to justify, you know, more crappy deals or even financial fraud than you can imagine. I think what sells is creating some magical date that, you know, this is coming and it's going to be really big and really bad and you've got to do all these things before, so you've got to do it now. You've got to buy what I'm offering you now. The dollar right now is dangerous and dominant, you know, and it's certainly on a long-term trajectory to lose market share and even lose reserve currency status, depending on how the military questions go. But the reality is, if you look at what's happening globally, there are no alternatives to the dollar for liquidity in the global financial system. It's 62.5% of global reserves. That's huge. You know, the euro's not in a position to replace it. The Chinese yuan will take decades. I always say the Chinese have one or two aircraft carriers. We have 10. They have a regional satellite system. We have a global satellite system. So, there's no serious replacement yet. And so I think all of these scenarios are just, they're capturing the energy that we all feel. I did a presentation in, when was it? 2004, called Navigating the Falling Dollar. And if you look at a long-term chart of the dollar, we are navigating a falling dollar. It's been that way for quite a while. So, certainly since the tech bubble ended. So we're in a world where we are losing our clout. And in part, that's why you see this sort of desperate struggle to keep that clout going. But I would be very, very careful about these scenarios about global reset. If you read our annual wrap-ups, our way of dealing with all these things is to have scenarios. It is a terrible mistake to have a single prophecy view of the future. No one knows what the future is going to be, and this thing could go in many, many different ways, to inflation, to deflation. We could have, all sorts of events and nuclear wars, and that's why I use scenario planning. If you look at the archives, there's a great Saleri report from last year called Scenario Thinking. And every year in the annual wrap-up, I do scenarios. And it's very important that those are great examples, but you've got to come down and believe what you think the scenarios are going to be, what the probabilities of those scenarios are going to be, and get clear about how you would allocate your time, your personal and business plans, and your money to deal with those different scenarios. And that's the idea of sort of balanced portfolio allocations, is you're dealing, you want to make sure you're fine in all scenarios. Next question. I live in a $3 million home on a golf course in Colorado with a $1.6 million mortgage. Do you think our real estate market is at risk along with our financial paper money system, and therefore I should be downsizing and eliminating debt as quickly as possible? A lot of this depends on your local market. So you're in an area which is going to be, it's going to be strong in 3.0. You're not going to be slaughtered by the shift from 2.0 to 3.0. You're going to be, you're going to have that wind in your sails. The reality is, if we go through a bad patch, do you have sufficient income or assets to make sure you handle that mortgage and you don't get caught and lose your equity, you don't get squeezed in a corner? So I don't know your situation. Everybody's unique. The reality is, I don't, I personally don't want to be responsible for lots and lots of debt right now. So, I chose to buy a very modest home. I still have a mortgage on it, but I do think that if you look at the risks now, the risks are that real assets are going up and the fixed income markets and the paper will be debased. So you're on the right side of inflation, you're on the right side of taxes. However, if we get into a deflationary spiral, the real risk for you is, can you handle that debt in a deflationary spiral? If you can, then maybe it's worth running the risk. If you don't want to live with that risk, I would. You might want to bring the size of that mortgage down or get it paid off. I would certainly accelerate your payments as much as you can. So it really depends on you and what risks you want to live with. But I do not like debt in this environment. But all signs are we're going to continue to be on an inflationary course with real estate. Again, I would use scenarios. Question three, if the black budget deep state war model is crumbling, what comes next? I don't know that it's crumbling. It looks to me like it's really strong. All the guys who won in the bailouts, all the guys who won on 9/11 look stronger than ever. So I don't know that it's crumbling. I wouldn't assume that it is. This website below is predicting a severe economic collapse in America in the next 10 years, where we lose 270 million people. The prediction is crazy, but the site seems well sourced from the size and scope of the other data that is presented. Do you have any sources that can vet this? No, I've looked at it before. The link is to Deagle, DEAGEL.com, and they have country forecasts. And yes, they show a radical depopulation in the United States. I've never, other than that website, I've never seen a depopulation for the U.S. that was predicted to be that severe. I don't see how you get that kind of depopulation unless you get a complete abrupt collapse of the military-industrial complex, or the kind of intentional cleansing you would get with nuclear warfare or a plague. So I just see that scenario as unlikely. Where they get their assumptions or reasoning from, they don't explain them. So I just see that scenario as being unlikely. Dear Catherine, again, thank you for all you do for us. You and your site are helping me in every aspect of my life. Can't thank you enough. Question, can you briefly comment on how the missing money differs or overlaps with our $20 trillion of debt? Is the $18 trillion totally separate from the $20 trillion we know that we owe? If the $18 trillion is separate, will those debts be coming onto the balance sheet in the future? The answer is we have no idea. We don't know what those $18 trillion are. We don't know how much are revenues. We don't know how much are expenses. So we don't know. You know, if it was $9 trillion coming in and $9 trillion going out, then it's a $9 trillion problem, not a $18 trillion problem. And $18 trillion in undocumentable adjustments could be $2 trillion in cash or $30 trillion in cash. There's no way to know. I have a much better sense for the undocumentable adjustments at HUD, which I believe to be mostly and significantly fraud. So DOD, I have less personal experience with DOD. Anyway, so it's perfectly possible that we issued $19 trillion of, because Dr. Skidmore found another $1 trillion, so I'm using 19. We issued $20 trillion of debt and then stole $19 trillion of the proceeds, you know, so, or we have $20 trillion of debt, but we issued another $19 trillion of debt off balance sheet. It's not on the books, but it's floating around in the foreign markets, and then somebody stole that money out through the back door. So we're stuck with the debt, whether it's on balance sheet or off balance sheet, because the creditors certainly think, you know, it's on balance sheet or they're treating it as such. But there's not enough information to know what's really going on. But my point is, particularly because I can absolutely be very confident about the HUD money, this is not just accounting errors. Something massively fraudulent is going on. And then someone writes, Google, I finally took action and said goodbye to Google, except for YouTube, which will be a longer process of separation. Here's my open letter that you may share with others without my name, please. Goodbye, Google. I am one, but we the people of the United States are many. We the people enjoy free expression as our first freedom. Google has violated the core value of we the people by censoring hundreds of voices, especially those of whistleblowers, innovators, truth tellers, and others who don't agree with Google's political views. Since Google has turned its back on the basic right of we the people, I now have to turn my back on Google and say goodbye. Goodbye, Google Search. My new search engine doesn't collect my private information, track me, or limit my access to truth tellers and whistleblowers. Goodbye to my Gmail accounts. My new email company keeps my communications secure and private. And a lingering goodbye to YouTube that economically disadvantages and actively censors and disrupts truth tellers and fair-minded journalists who counter Google's desired groupthink. And as more of us find and switch to viable alternatives to YouTube, I, for one, plan to never return. Do no evil. Not anymore. Bye-bye, then. Good for you. I'm always amazed at everybody who uses Google. It's, you know, you're not safe. Why are you doing it? I don't know. Anyway, good for you, and I hope it inspires others to absolutely drop Google.